This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
So now we're going to really test the technological rigor of the organization and something called Zoom. We're going from Los Angeles, California to Yerushalayim. It's a 10-hour time difference. Do we have Yerushalayim up already?
I'm a speaker, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You actually have Bet Shemesh. You actually don't have Yerushalayim, you have Bet Shemesh, but that's as close as Yerushalayim as I'm getting. Bet Shemesh, what?
Okay, close enough.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, we've had the pleasure of having some communication with Rev Lapiansky, who is well known, besides being a Rosh Yeshiva in Washington, is someone who is adding much to the to Klal Yisrael, both as a special representative of the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and also someone who has been able to articulate messages for Bnei Torah, for families, for communities. I have here on my desk, I have one of the Sfarim that you've written, Ben Torah for Life, and I try and go through it. Even the Maimar Chazal, you asked me to look at the Meshech Chachma in the back, so thank you for that. And we reached out to Rav Lapiansky to tell him about this special Zoom conference. And he graciously offered to give us a thought on opening a conversation with students about the Corona period. Everybody's grappling for how do we talk about this? What does it mean? It's really uncharted territory. Rabbi Dr. Fox just spoke for 2 hours about the social, emotional, and psychological needs. But we need like a practical message of what we can tell people. And we have about 100 principals who are online right now. And B'chavad Rav, we're very, very happy that you were able to make the time from Yerushalayim. So what was morning for Dr. Fox is actually nighttime for Rabbi Lapiansky. And unfortunately, New York is stuck in the middle someplace. We're not sure which way we're going. But we thank you and B'vaka Shachana. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Ashakayach have glass. I hate to play a pun on your words, but what's daylight in Los Angeles is considered dark night in Eretz Yisrael. That might actually be some sort of remez of message of some sort, or just don't quote me on it. It's going to be a little difficult because I don't know the range of grades, but I assume it's a big range of grades that are represented in the consortium over here. And obviously, the points I'm trying to make, you'll have to adapt to age appropriate. Not only, I would like to hope that the sketch of the general idea can work well for many levels, but the technique of asking and eliciting responses obviously depends on the age and so on. It's a unique situation. We have an event that's not part of the normal school year curriculum or anything, and therefore, more than any other time, I think children will be ready to have a discussion about it. So I'd like to frame the general theme and then try to point at some different points that you might develop in a conversation. There's a pasuk in Tehillim. It says, "Asher Geva Asher Tiasrenu Ko Umitayroschot Lamdeno." That fortunate is a person that a Kadosh Baruch Hu afflicts, causes suffering, and teaches him his Torah. So the primary pshat, the pshat that the Gemara gives, is that the word is despite. In other words, if a person suffers, it's meant to do him some good. But if because of the suffering, he can't learn or daven, so he loses out on it. But Yisurim Shel Ava is Yisurim where a person has Yisurim that serve whatever purpose and is still able to learn. That's one pshat, that the learning, the Torah Shel Lamdena, is despite. A second pshat, the Radak brings from his father, he quotes it in a very chavivdik way, in a way where he's, and he says, Kibi Yisurim Yelamdenu Das V'Torah, through Yisurim, he teaches a person understanding, wisdom, and Torah. She Yoshev Lovda Leva Shalom, to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, the lesson is that a person returned to the good, and that is a very, very important lesson. And therefore, the Yisurim are sort of, it's a teaching moment in the general sense that it brings him back to doing what's right. That's what Radak is his father. This Fasemis in Parshas Re'ei says what I think is a pshat that goes to the neshama of it, and he says, "Umitayrasat lamdeno b'toycha yisurim yimtzo limud." The yisurim themselves teach the person. In other words, as opposed to the Radak, for instance, where it just sort of deflects the person to a good road, and then the smack, so to speak, gets him to go to yeshiva, and yeshiva sits and learns, so the smack is educational in one sense of the word. Here he says, in the Yisurim itself, it teaches the person learns something from the Yisurim itself, and that's the Mitaras of Lamdena. That's what Sfasemis says in Pashas Rei, Tafresh Tantes, and I think it goes to the heart of what we want to talk about. In other words, we do a lot, you know, when we talk about suffering and so on, we tend to always say it's all for the good. And all for the good is the kind of stories we usually give the kids are, you know, somebody was hit by somebody, and then when he got to the hospital, they found some other disease, and because of being hit by the person, he was saved. And so, things of that nature. The wind blew down my house, but I found a treasure underneath. We always kind of think of it in sort of goods for goods. That's the interplay, and I think that's shortchanging ourselves as people who interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yisurim themselves teach a person things, and trying to understand what it taught me, not indirectly but directly, is, I think, an invaluable way to look at many things in life. Obviously, this, you know, ranging in age, this is, you know, for a much older boy, for an older teenager, this is a message that could be given over fairly straight. But I think I'm going to try to give some examples and I'll try to work through it. The first and most general point of Yisurim, and the lesson that they have on a person, is they teach a person strengths, they show a person strengths that he had that he was never aware of, and they point out weaknesses he was never aware of. I want to give out two stories about it, just that came to mind about strengths. Somebody Rebbe used to push Bachram to learn, and he had all of his programs of learning Shas, and on and on and on. He was relentless. I mean, his Friday night Tishim went on most of the night, and it was mostly Pilpulim and Ktsayis and this. He was a relentless taskmaster in learning. And someone made a remark to him, "Chunish kin koyach, I don't have any koyach." So the Rebbe told him, "Never say that." And he said, "I was a frail young man in Europe, and he said I was so frail that when I had to go say a shir, I needed a bacha to take my sfarim because I simply couldn't lift them." He said, "Guess what? I showed up in the concentration camp, and I slept 50-pound bags of cement on my shoulder alone, and I found out that I have a lot more koach than I thought I have." So for him, the teaching moment of the camps was what incredible kohos a person has in himself. So whenever a person is confronted with difficult situations, one thing a person will have to ask himself when he gets through to the other side is, did I find anything about myself capable of doing that I never thought I could? You will find people who couldn't raise a nickel and they undertook great projects and they raised incredible amounts of money because something about the burden brought it out in them. So that's one half of it. The second half of it is, and this goes to the general sense of what the purpose of a nisayon is, we have many layers. A mashal that I use a lot of times is when I was young. I hate to sound like an old man reminiscing about the old days, but I was once upon a time much younger, and in my days when they did root canals, it was a 5-6 visits to the dentist. I never was sure if it needed that or that was just parnassa, but I wasn't quite sure on that, but that was the metzias. And what they would do is, they would, you know, the first visit he would empty out the pus and so on. Each time he came back, he would probe a little bit deeper until it hurt. And then he said, okay, so it's still infected over there. He would apply medication until a fifth or sixth visit, usually. He could, you know, you wouldn't feel anything. And then he said, okay, it's all healed. And then he would fill it permanently and so on. That was a normal mahalach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashgacha is to bring out the best in us. And the best in us is that it's a lot of times we do okay, but scratch underneath the surface and it's not quite okay. It's like the Satan told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Gaboy, just touch him. Yehovah is a wonderful tzaddik. He wasn't denying, he didn't say he's not a tzaddik, but he said, how deep is that sitkis? Just stick a pin and the balloon bursts. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Yisurim. One of the reasons, one of the patterns of Yisurim is to see when it becomes too difficult and we realize we're not what we thought we are. I want to tell a story, something I heard once that I think brought this point home. I think it possibly brought both points home. I heard a hesped many, many, many years ago on Rav Nekritz by his son-in-law, Rav Shiva Far Rockaway, Rav Per. And he said the following, it was a Levaya, I guess, and he said that his father-in-law was stuck in Siberia for 5 years during the war. He was in Siberia. It was the best years of his life, should have been the best years of his life, and he missed out. He didn't learn what he could have learned, I don't know the exact age, but it was the age when a person would typically steig in yeshiva the most, and he couldn't make use of that. He ended up being a very chashuv person anyway, but that was later supplemented. But he said, and if I remember correctly, I may not have learned many things, but I learned about myself. I learned the most important lesson, I learned myself. In other words, to understand yourself, you need to understand yourself under difficult conditions. There are people that are nice and smile and good and fine and sweet. The question is, when everything around is not so fine and sweet and good, where are we? So Yisurim and difficulties bring out both a demonstration of what a person has that he didn't know he had, and also what he's missing. So that's a broad outline of what we would try to do. It's a question that is too broad, I think, for children I'm talking about through high school age. I don't think that is something, but I'd like to try to deal with some more pointed questions, topics that I think you could elicit a lot of good discussion. Bear in mind, on the one hand, you want discussion. On the other hand, a broad or general question is not easily answered by children. They don't have yet frameworks. They don't have yet terminology. So you need to coax. You need to coach a bit, and in sort of how about this? How about this? How about this? But the point is, you'd like them to express it the best of their. The first question, the first discussion, I feel would be along the following lines. How many boys found going to school difficult? You know, in the good old days, before the Corona days, how felt it was a drag to go and to every day and the burden of it and relentless and on and on and on. I think most kids will express some sense that it's difficult. Now ask the kids to be honest with themselves and say there were many days when during the whole tkufa when you really had nothing to do. You could do anything you wanted, which is the same. You could do anything you wanted and there was nothing. You didn't have to go anywhere. You didn't have to zoom into the share. There were no Zoom share. Didn't have homework to do, this and that. How did you feel about that? How did you feel when a day just dragged on and you could do whatever you want? So, you know, kids will begin, you know, there'll be a wise guy will say, yeah, it's the best time ever, I wish I could go. And I think most kids will understand. And then you could say, understand that that's what life is about. Being productive means working hard and wishing you could rest. But being unproductive is wretched. In other words, your choice is not, there's a perfect vacation is when you worked hard and then you have some time to take it easy. But when life is meaningless, I had somebody tell me the most important thing was to remember at 9:30 in the evening to change pajamas. That was the way he described the most important of it. Ask it, and you know what? For this is the first time many kids and many adults experienced it. And most of the time, kids have a very relentless schedule. You know, you have school, camp, you know, getting ready, physical getting ready. You normally have routine. It's the first time, and then you begin to climb the walls, and then you get to understand that Adam la'amol yulad, we were created to be productive, and having a schedule, and having pressure, and so you need to adjust it, but understand it. I think that's a first lesson that I think you could elicit positive responses. And obviously, no, I mean, I don't have to tell you the malacha. I mean, people know a younger kid, you might want to describe more. What does it feel like? Because someone described to me how ichy it is when there's just nothing to do and so on. But get the kids to understand that the choice in life is between productivity and waste. And waste is a lot more painful than the stress of productivity. Two, ask them if they learned better at home or in school, and then why, and shouldn't they appreciate the fact that learning with a chevra is much better? So it requires certain sacrifice, it requires coming on time, but ask themselves to grade themselves, if they had to give themselves a mark for the 3 months that they were at home learning or in school. And again, let them ask themselves what's better about it. And then say, so doesn't it, you know, isn't it worth the sacrifice to get up and go? A third question along this line would be, where was your davening better? And this way could go both ways. It's fine. Whichever way, so if a kid tells you at home he davened better, so ask him, why would you think it's like that? And do you think you can take... So we'll tell the davening was slower, less distractions. So then you could make a point about, it's up to you. In other words, so at home there's no distractions, that's great. What distracts you in school? So if it's somebody else, then why don't you just, you know, stick to the, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and do it? Do you really want to do it? I think this is an open question. I know adults found davening at home, some yes, some better, some less better. But I think it's a good discussion. And whichever way he goes, ask why. And then ask, okay, now that you're going back and there's a chiyuv to daven betzibur, but what can you do to make it good again. You've now seen a better davening. So let's ask ourselves why. If it's slower, maybe you also go slower a little bit. If it's because less distraction, well, what can you do to limit distraction? Things of that nature. I'd like to add, now go on to not specific things, but I'd like to go on to more, I guess, middos or things of that nature. I think a very important limud is as follows. How many things did you have to forego when you had, during this tkufa? You were expecting to go away for the summer. Your parents had planned a trip. You were going to go here. You're going to go do that. What things did you miss out? What things did you lose out? Now ask them, Acher HaMaisa, can you cope with it? The point I would like, I feel we need to get across in general, is the following point. That a person has a taiva, a chemda, whatever you want to call it, for nice things, good things, comfortable things, I understand that. The bigger problem is not having the sense of feeling the strength of being able to do without. In other words, it's nice to have a comfortable car to go someplace, but the ability to pick yourself up and to walk there and to go there, even, you know, the strength that it takes, just, yeah, I'll get up and go. The stampkes bemuot, not as a midah tova in terms of taking less kashmias, but as a certain personal strength to be able to do something. I remember somebody told me he runs a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I don't remember which yeshiva it was. It might have been the Tiv Arya. I don't remember. But a kid came there from one of the wealthy neighborhoods in New York. And this kid was 17, 18. And he was very annoyed with the lack of Gashmis in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that the kid likes Gashmis, I get that. But there's also, where are those juices of, you know, we all we had was a canteen and we went for a 3-day tiyul. The ability to be able to do without things, that gives a person a certain strength and that a person feels strong about it, that should be very empowering. It's natural for a young person to sort of, you know, I don't need any of it. I can do it on my own. You know, sometimes reckless, but it's a midah tova. It's a very basic midah. I remember when I came to the Meir Yeshiva, it's 1970, the conditions were wretched is an overstatement. I mean, the bed I slept on was a straw mattress, a little straw mattress that who knows how old it was. It was really pretty bad. But my greatest moment of Nachas Ruach was my father, who was a survivor of the camps, came to visit. He sat down on my bed and he said, "My gosh, this is like bricks. How can you sleep on it?" So I was so proud of myself. Ah, a war survivor said that he doesn't know how, you know, this is, so I'm a giver, you know, like, but that's normal. But you raise kids that don't have that basic sense. That sense of being able, the chayrus, there's a certain sense of freedom. What's the midah tova of that? So you have an 18-year-old who can have a jet go anywhere he wants. He says, you know, I'll walk there. I can hike. I can go there. All I need is a knapsack and a water canteen. I'm good to go. It's a certain sense of not needing anything, of being mistopic from yourself. Those are very, very basic midas of a person, good midas. And unfortunately, more and more are lacking it. It's like there's never a moment when we have it. This forced us, for a lot of us, to be involved in things. And you can ask, what did you miss? And then you say, now that you've missed it, do you feel certain that you're able to do without it also, that you're able to manage it. Eating out, for some people, it's a very important Avodas HaKodesh to eat out constantly and to try this restaurant, that restaurant, the other restaurant, and you were stuck. You're stuck at home, and that's it. So do you feel that that gave you a certain strength? To talk about that in a way where you sort of use that, but now that you've done it, doesn't it show you that you can do without it also? Doesn't it show you? I think that that's it's something that is very basic. I think that it's hard. You're not going to take a kid whose parents have decided to pamper him kultuv and force him to change. It's very difficult. But now that they've been there, tell them, how bad was it when you didn't have a kiddush every Shabbos to go to, or five kiddushim to go to? What was it really so terrible? And I think, you know, it's something that could be used as a way to drive home a very, very strong lesson about certain basics in life. I would also like to use it, I think we can use it, as a way of trying to understand they should understand themselves in terms of Aaron Havero in the following way. You can ask them, when you were quarantined, then you were together with everybody for a long amount of time, were there moments that you acted in ways that you didn't really shouldn't have? Snapping at people, getting angry at people, fighting, quarreling. Hard to believe that it didn't happen. So have them reflect, why do you think it is? And what do you think you could do? What are the reasons that you created this victim? You think, you know, ask every kid to rate himself if he's a nice guy or not. And most people will rate themselves, you know, kind of, they'll give themselves a 9 out of 10. That'll probably be like the normal, you know, except you get exceptions from both ends. But, and now ask them, during this time, where do you think you are? Where are you? And why is it? Let's ask ourselves. It will help us understand, are we better people because we respect other people? We give them the space they need? Or is it just because, you know, with everything is fine and good and so on? I think, and again, it's helpful if a teacher has a few points in mind and sort of subtly introduce it. Do you think it might be this? Do you think it might be this? I think it will help them reflect a lot about the difference between being a nice guy when there's no real nisayon, or being a nice guy when things are tough. Hopefully it'll bring them to understand that Benon Chaver is not just, well, guys like me, I like the guys, everything's good, there's enough to go around, and so we're a happy-go-lucky group. But when it's either me is getting it or he's getting it, it's you know, I'm not in the mood for anybody, and this guy is in my room whether I like it or not, that evokes friction. And how do we deal with it? And so on. One more point. In Ben Adam Chaveri, and I think this is going to be more difficult, and I think you have to be a little more judicious in how to talk about it. There were a lot of people that were very lonely. A lot of people spent their Pesach, Seder, looking at four walls. I was with my wife in the States at the time, and all the kids called from it. So in America, nobody lives near us, not even close. You know, they tell my wife, it's so terrible, you're alone. And she would say, well, I'm actually with your father. It's not so alone. It's not as bad as you make it out to be. So, but there were people, there were my neighbors, there were a few almanis sitting alone. So again, this you have to be careful, obviously, who, what, when. But I want to use it in a certain way. I want them, as an exercise, to sit and to picture themselves sitting alone at a Seder night with nothing. Plenty of matzah, plenty of wine, and just sitting, staring at the four walls and thinking nobody's there. Nobody cares for me. Of course, everyone cared, but that's a Esther to pick that for a while. And I think Esther to think of a specific neighbor who went through this. Now, so I think it's the first time that they could possibly imagine what loneliness feels like. They could possibly empathize the point of loneliness. So I want to use it in as a leverage for two things. First of all, you know, you're always prompted to go visit your grandparents, you go visit this older person, that older person, you always schlep and you don't feel like doing this and that. Now, do you understand? Now you actually saw in front of your eyes what it's like. Do you understand what it means to somebody who has nobody to be there? That's one Hispaniness. The second one is, there are people in a classroom who are always left out. And kind of, and again, you have to be very sensitive, because if it's obvious or whatever it is, this you need to say, think of what it means to be not invited. I tell them many times, one of the most emotionally wrenching interactions I had was the following. There was a boy many years ago who learned Parsi Yeshiva. Nice boy, you know, nothing, you know, just, I don't know, just a nice kid, no special distinguishing factors. He was a little bit, you know, the type of thing you would call socially awkward, but not in any way that you would think is parallel. Nothing that stood out in L'Tayv or L'Mutav. He came over to me once and he said, Rebbe, I have a question to ask. He said, every year at Simchas Torah, do you know when I get an aliyah? Oh, when the Gabbai says, he looks around the room and says, so is there anyone here who still hasn't gotten an aliyah? That's when I get my aliyah. So he said, I decided this past Simchas Torah, I'm going to change things. And I stood next to the Gabbai. And he said, Rebbe, do you know when I got an aliyah? When he turned around and he said, is there anybody here who still hasn't gotten aliyah? Why am I always that person? It really was wrenching. It really, really was wrenching. It's one thing when somebody does things that are wrong. So I would tell them, well, you're so obnoxious and you do such terrible things and then you're not there for other people and v'chulu. If I could find a Muslim, so fine, okay, that's an occasion to do but there's nothing wrong with the person. I think understanding the idea of what it's like not to be included, to be left out, is something HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced on us. Even people who did have somebody, like, you know, if you didn't have your whole family, it wasn't pleasant, and you're cut off from other people that you liked, that you appreciated. So now look around at other people. And again, this requires sensitivity, because there's classroom dynamics and there's one, two kids that might be obvious, and I would look at it. I say kachmaschem, but at least I'm trying to get the point. So I want to go over some of the basic nekudas. The first thing is, I would like to say, I think it's important not to make it generic and say, well, this teaches us how human beings are not, you know, how little we control our destiny and how much we have to do tshuva and come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's too general, it's been said too many times, and it has no good ending. When the ending is, and therefore we all should do tshuva and return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, believe of Shalom, it's like somebody once said, when the Darshan says, and the Gula should come in every Yemenu, you know the Gula has arrived already. It's a message that's too vague and too general. What, we went through a tough tkufa. What did we learn from it itself personally? That's the point. And I would like in Linus Vas Emes that he says that umitarasot lamdenu, that the yesurim were the teachers. The word musar and the word yesurim come from the same basic root. They're ways of directing a person to doing what's right. Musar is with an emotional appeal. Also kind of, you know, a strong emotional appeal. Yesurim is a physical appeal, but it's meant to have a message. And the message needs to be specific to each person. The general message of any Yisurim is to understand what I realized in myself, what I can do. Layadati nafshi, I didn't even know. People went through difficult circumstances. Say, wow, I didn't know I could do that. On the other hand, it also reveals some painful truths about ourselves. Things that we thought were rock bottom, shake us hard enough, and those things. So let's say the person who davened marvelously well in shul, put him in his own dalaramis with nobody looking, and the davening kind of evaporates a bit. This person is wonderfully great, you know, geschmacka, nice person. Coop him up with his family for a long enough time, and he becomes a difficult person. So those are lessons to teach us. It's not as rock bottom. We need to build a more firmer foundation. I think using it to have a discussion with the boys, with the girls, boys, with the talmidim, talmidos, I think would be very effective. It's always effective, obviously, when they can speak on their own, when they don't know what answer expecting. You know, in many other cases, they know more or less the answer expecting, and so maybe it becomes a recital, but this could be genuine. Important is to understand that younger children have a harder, the young dad have a harder time formulating ideas because just don't have the set of terms and ideas and models and paradigms to say it. So you need to say, you know, you need to sort of hint at it, give some examples of yourself, and you know, things of that nature. And some of the areas that I thought was the sense of what it's like to have structure in life, seder, structure, purpose. I think that's an important nekuda that we need to reinforce. One of the things I always feel when people speak about hashkafas in the street or in America that are treif and kenega Torah, to me, one of the most treifa terms is leisure culture. Our leisure culture is either harzeisim or harmnuchas. We have only one purpose in this world, and that is to do something. And it's not only, and we have to realize it to a point where we relish doing it. It's like somebody in a factory. This person can want luxuries, but in the factory or in the corporation, he wants just work. He just wants to close another deal, produce another this, sell another this, whatever it is. A person needs to feel that way, and he needs to relish and understand that leisure is misa in this world, and it's true theologically, but it's true psychologically, and it's true physiologically. People who are doing nothing become nothing very rapidly, and people who are charged up and people who feel they have purpose and a mission and work to do it. So I think that's an important lesson that the kids, for the first time, felt what it's like when it's just do what you want all day long. I think that you can point out some things about davening and learning, was it better this way, that way, or, you know, and try to elicit why, and then say, how can we have the best of both worlds? Can we take the lessons you learned and implement it? I also feel that it would be, again, this is a point that's to me always there, talking about on personal development, things that we were able to do without, and Baruch Hashem, we survived. It's not so terrible that you don't go away for Pesach. Ask, you know, if you're in an environment where most kids tend to go away for Pesach and they're home, ask them, were the things nicer at home than being away? I know it's nice to be away. It's, you know, it's the golf course, the this, the that, the whatever, the pool, whatever the kids like. But what's nice at home? And what's nice about being at home and so on? Get the kids to understand and appreciate that you need less goods and more inner connection to appreciate things, like things. And I think in relationship with other people, with other kids, try to find out, did they, you know, try to get them to think of points of how they interact with other people, why they react in certain ways, and if possible, the point about loneliness, I think it's a very important nakuda. It has to be done sensitivity, but I think it, you know, you obviously don't want to talk about where everybody knows whose grandfather sat alone and felt terrible, and if, you know, if everyone knows which kid, I those are obvious things. But in general, the sense of somebody who's not fully integrated in society, not fully connected, the pain of that, the emotional pain of that, I think is something we need to sensitize kids more to. So, Nes Hashem, hopefully, we'll walk away having learned each one of us something about it, and learning about ourselves, and hopefully not only teaching kids about it, but this is a chance for kids to become more self-aware, more reflective, and if we've given them the proverbial rod to fish, instead of feeding them fish, by having a discussion like this, if it goes well, you've taught them to fish, to look into things, to reflect on things, to understand things, and Be'ez Hashem, it should be Be'atzlacha Mitzrayim. Okay, good.
Thank you so much. I, as I was listening, I too, with my wife, it was the first Pesach we were alone in 43 years, marriage. And there are things we learned about each other that we might have known, but we never really shared. So it was a very special opportunity, and we hope we don't have to do it again. But the words you said were just so important for Mechanchim to understand just how to talk to the kids. So we really appreciate it. We hope everything is going well in Eretz Yisrael. We know it's a little difficult there today, yeah. And these days. And have a